This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. Babies waving to grandma over a cell phone, kids playing video games on weekends and before bedtime during the week. How worried should we be about all this screen time? And what does the research actually tell us? NPR education correspondent and mother of two, Anya Kamenetz, says there's an art to balancing screen time as a parent. She's out with a new book that brings together the science and the lived experiences of hundreds of families using digital media. This hour on Point, how to balance a happy family life with screens. You can join us on air or online. When screens are everywhere, what is a parent to do? What are the rules about digital use in your house? What should they be? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me now from New York is Anya Kamenetz, lead digital educational correspondent for NPR. She's author of The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. You can find a link to an excerpt of her book at our website at onpointradio.org. And Anya, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I'm happy to be here.
I'd really like to just start off with a really basic question. You're a sort of science correspondent, a parent. Why did you want to write this book and bring those two sort of expertises together, I guess?
Because I needed this book. basically, that's the simple question. You know, there's parenting books out there on almost every topic, but this is so new. And there's a huge divide in the conversation. You know, if you talk about education, where I've been for the last decade, it's all about the promise of technology and how wonderful it's going to be and how it's going to connect everyone. And if you talk about, you know, a family life and home and really all these aspects of our intimate lives, there's so much worry. There's so much anxiety. Well, what are these screens really doing? And so I set out to kind of try to thread the needle and you know, walk into the forest and figure out what I could.
Well, it's a great idea. There's something in terms of what we don't know. Early in the book, you laid out a couple of facts that just blew my mind. I'm just going to read. This is the beginning of chapter two. The last major piece of federally funded research on children and media in the United States was titled Television and Behavior. It was published by the National Institutes of Mental Health in 1982.
The last major
piece of federally funded research on this stuff. That's just amazing. 1982.
I mean, in some ways, it's a story about federally funded research, maybe about the forward march of technology and how fast it gets out of control. But yeah, it really is kind of amazing. And, you know, even if there had been huge budgets to look at this intersection, it's just coming so fast. You know, the research on interactive technology that we have now is based on, you know, formats that really are totally outdated from a few years ago. And so it's hard to get up-to-date information.
Yeah, and it really speaks to this issue of how quickly this is moving. And I mean, that explains, among other reasons, why people are so hungry for this kind of information. I love as well how you describe the amount of hand-wringing there is among parents. A lot of us can relate to that. You have in here, one father confessed to me that he has that feeling that every minute his toddler is engrossed in a screen, it's adding to his bad dad debt. Boy, I've been there.
Yeah. And I mean, so the surrounding dimension of this is that this is a very high anxiety age for parents. And that's true of all kinds of issues. And actually, I count that back to the internet as well in some ways, because there's so much information that's out there that's really designed to make us feel bad about this choice or that choice, and also the fallacy that we have so much control over the environment when, in fact, you know, the technological environment that our families are growing up in is determined by a whole bunch of things. It's about the economy. It's about these huge tech companies and what they want to do. And so it's not really all up to us as parents, and we don't have all the control that we wish that we had. That's not to say that we are totally powerless either.
Yeah. So after surveying hundreds of parents, what are some of the common issues that families are facing when it comes to kids and screens? What are some of the common questions that you want to offer answers to?
So families are having battles with their kids about powering down the screens. And the reason behind that is that, you know, so many other things that we try to do as families, let's say, you know, get them to go to bed on time or get them to say thank you and please. It gives you an immediate benefit as a parent, right? So they're doing something good and you feel good and you have a quiet kitchen at 9 p.m. because the kids are in bed. The problem with screen time is that parents use it to get a break. And we put on the screens when we need to work or we need to get ready in the morning. And sometimes we do it whenever it's convenient for us. And so that adds up to inconsistency in limit setting that makes it really hard for the kids to understand. This is when they're young, you know, and you really just need a break. And so how can we be consistent and set limits and set a balance when, you know, you throw it out the window the next day because you're in a hurry or you're late for work? And that's one of the most common dilemmas that I see with families.
We're talking to Anya Kamenetz. She has written The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. Let's go to Vanessa, who's calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Vanessa, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Anthony.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Well, my husband and I have been discussing this topic just as early as last night, trying to kind of manage the kids' screen time. They're 2 and 7. But we noticed that we, too, are on screen. So we wake up in the morning and we have 2 careers and we've got to, you know, check email and do everything we need to do. So they're seeing us using devices pretty much everywhere. And so I'm excited that there's a book coming out. But also, how do we stop when we also need to use them in modern life?
Vanessa, this is a great question. And Anya, this is one that you really address in a big way, this idea of, you know, the parents' use of screen time really feeds into to the kind of overall challenge of regulating our kids' use of screen time.
Vanessa, I'm so glad that you called. I spent several chapters in the book talking about parents' own relationships to media. I think that we may be more addicted to our phones even than non-parents because we are trying to be in 2 places at once, especially as working parents. You know, what I would challenge you to do, and your older kid, your kids are the same ages as mine, you know, we need to enlist the whole family in this and figuring out what is a good balance and when does it make sense to have the screens on and have it off. It may not be realistic to put them away all the time, but can you have certain designated times that help make your day a little bit calmer? I think for me, it's helped to get through most of the morning routine without looking at my phone and then choose that moment, you know, when you send the kids upstairs to brush their teeth or whatever it is and check in mindfully, then you're in control of that check-in. So figuring out when to have the screens on, when to have them off, and have a family agreement about it because your kids will hold you to that. They see you as much as you're trying to regulate them, and it's best if you're all agreeing on it together.
Thank you so much, Vanessa, for that call. Anya, you came up with some sort of nice, clean, simple statements about this. You sort of reappropriated Michael Pollan's great comment about food. He's a food writer who wrote, "Eat food, not a lot, mostly plants." Your maxim is enjoy screens, not too much, mostly together. Do you want to sort of expand that out and explain what that means?
Enjoy screens because I want people to remember that we're using technology for all the great things that it brings to our lives. We don't want it to be in control of us, but we want to think mindfully, how am I connecting? How am I using it to be expressive, to learn new things, and sharing those positive uses with your kids so, you know, they don't just default to kind of the passive, mindless pursuits that we all kind of do in our not-so-great moments. Not too much, because as wonderful as technology can be, there are many wonderful things that kids need. They certainly need to be out there in 3D space, playing outside, connecting face-to-face, this, you know, eating healthy, climbing trees, all those great things need to be fit into the schedule. Sleeping, that's a really important one. And then mostly together, I think a piece that's been missing in the conversation around screens is that when it comes to kids, they need to be engaged alongside you for at least some of the time that they're using media. They need to pick up from you, help interpreting what they're seeing and getting the best messages from it. If it is educational, or if it's pro-social, if it's not so great, they need your help interpreting it. And you need to be understanding what they love so much. And that's why, you know, it's mostly together that screen time can really take off and be positive for the family.
What do we really know? What did you discover that we actually really understand about the dangers of too much screen time?
The sleep researchers really have it on the ball because they understand the mechanism. They understand that the blue light that's on the mobile devices, that's shining in people's eyes, close to their faces, mobile devices and laptops, that is interfering with hormone production that interferes with sleep, as well as cortisol, which is the stress hormone. When you're doing something exciting or something worrisome or stressful on a device, that's also going to interfere with sleep. So devices out of the bedroom, out of the kids' bedroom, don't blow through nap time. Sometimes younger kids are skipping naps because they're very involved in the iPad. That's number one. Obesity has been researched for many, many years in connection with television and video watching. So the connections are pretty strong there. When kids are watching more than 2 hours a day of screens, it can double their risk of obesity. So that's something to pay attention to. And then across the board, there are kind of small but significant effects on things like aggression with violent media, ADHD. There's interactions with things in the autism spectrum, anxiety, depression. These are all kind of small effects. And the theories there are that there are certain children who may be more sensitive that we really need to watch out for, whereas the vast majority of the population will probably be just fine with an average amount of screen time.
Right. So then for a kind of bottom line recommendation, tell us what it is. Families with small kids, what do you recommend just in terms of bottom line recommendation in terms of number of minutes or hours during the day in front of a screen?
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics has done this for us, and they've done it based on the best evidence available. They kind of feel like, young toddlers, children under two, you don't want to do it for more than 30 minutes. Nothing more than they would with any other toy in the toy box. Mm-hmm. About an hour a day, through school age is a recommendation there. But it's really not only about time, and we'll talk about that.
Right. We'll talk about that. We're up against a break. We're going to be right back, though. We're discussing the new book, The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. You can join the conversation. What's the right balance here? Are you listening to the science, social pressure? What do you do in your household? We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Scott Detrow. There is so much political news to follow these days, but you don't have to keep up with all of it. You just have to keep up with us on the NPR Politics Podcast. You can find us on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're taking a look at how to make a balanced diet for families and their gadgets. You can join the conversation. Are you setting the right example for your kids with your own digital use? Is screen time a daily battle in your house? Have you figured it out? Share with us. I'm joined by Anya Kamenetz. She's lead digital education correspondent for NPR and author of The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. And to kick off this segment, here's a clip from 2011 in the ABC show Modern Family, where Claire, a mother of three, played by Julie Bowen, is banning phones from the dinner table.
Every Everybody, gadgets down now.
Why are you freaking out?
Because you're also involved with your little gizmos. Nobody is even talking.
So, Anya, what rules does your family have when it comes to screens? Can you give us some hints how you work that out?
Well, I hate to set myself forth as, you know, an example that everyone should do because every family is different. In our family, what works is that we designated Saturdays back when my older daughter turned two. Saturdays are for videos. She can watch whatever she wants on Saturdays. We also have, you know, if we're on the road or if there's a sick day, you know, the iPad will be out then. And then the rest of the week, we have a system of passes. They're really just theoretical at this point because she understands it, but it's three passes of 20 minutes. And so then she has to decide if she's going to take out the iPad that day. It means she might not be able to later in the week. So Saturdays are kind of like all bets are off, and then passes during the week just for the iPad only.
I see. So it's sort of a budget system, and you've got to stay within the sort of overall budget of total screen time.
Yes. And, you know, we see the impact when we go outside those bounds. We were traveling recently and she watched two movies on the plane, and then we got home and she was totally a mess, just emotional and overwrought. And, you know, I really connect that, and my husband especially connects that feeling to the screens, and the research backs that up.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Aaron, who's calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello, Anthony. How you doing?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Well, I got two kids. I've got a 6-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter. My son prefers to have bedtime stories read to him out of a real book, and my daughter, we're trying to break her of the Kindle habit. We can't get her head out of the computer for anything.
Right. So is your question, how do we do that? Anya, advice for Aaron.
So, you know, you've got a tween daughter. It's not really the right time developmentally to try to set hard and fast rules. You have to start to try to get them to come along with you and bargain and understand, you know, what are your shared values as a family? What is it that she really loves about her Kindle? Is there something better about the Kindle than reading on a paper book? Or would it be something that, you know, with a certain subscription or a library card that she'd, you know, get the book that she wants? So, you know, opening up that conversation, seeing what she likes so much about the screens that she's using, and if there's another way to get it, you know, get the things that she is looking for on the screens, I think that would be the beginning of the conversation.
Aaron, thanks for that call. And Anya, stand by because I want to introduce Dr. Dimitri Christakis. He's a pediatrician and director of Seattle Children's Research Institute Center for Child Health, Behavior, and Development. He looks at how exposure to electronic devices, including television, impacts young children. And Dr. Christakis, thanks for joining us. It's good to have you.
Good to be here.
I know you've been listening along. Let me just start by asking you to respond in any way you want from what you've been hearing.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate Anya's work in putting this book together. And as she kicked it off, she's exactly right. It's parents are in desperate need of advice for how to manage their children's digital lives. I would say that the previous caller, as I understood it, was concerned about his daughter's preference for a Kindle reading device rather than an actual book. And provided she's reading on her Kindle and not playing games, that's not a battle that I would particularly fight. You know, the Kindle, particularly if it's set to night settings, won't inhibit sleep. And honestly, reading before bed is a good and healthy activity. And if reading on a Kindle promotes it, I wouldn't fight that battle. I suspect he's got other battles to fight with his daughter around her use of digital media.
Interesting.
And this, I think, is sort of the central premise of Anya's book, is that parents have to sort of figure out how to navigate children's digital lives and extract the benefits of digital media and try to minimize the harms. And part of that really is picking your battles.
Interesting. Yeah. I would want to ask you, Dimitri, if I could, just about what your research has revealed about early childhood exposure to screens and the dangers associated with it, or your biggest concerns.
Well, you know, my biggest concern prior to the advent of iPads had been that that early use of what we now call analog media, which is to say television and videos, it was overstimulating to developing brains, and that could shorten attention spans later in life. And we did find that in several studies we did, that the more television, particularly fast-paced television, that young children watched, the more likely they were to have attentional problems at school age. that was my research prior to the advent of the iPad or these sort of interactive technologies, which, just to remind your listeners, the iPad was invented in 2010. It's only 8 years old. Most of us can't even remember a world before it existed, but it hasn't been around that long. These interactive technologies were truly a game changer in many ways. What we call sort of contingent reactions, meaning that the child touches a screen and makes something happen, very, very different than the passive experience of simply watching movies or television as children had done before. It has a tremendous potential upside, but it has a real potential downside. And what a lot of the work we're doing now is focused on the addictive component of these touch screens. And we see this in older children and adults, people who are truly tethered to their phones and feel a compulsion to look at them all the time. And what we're finding is that actually starts at a very, very young age. Children find the devices very difficult to disengage from.
Anya, I'd love to ask you about that. In talking to the 500 or so families that you did to do this book, did you hear a lot about that the addictive nature of this new technology?
Yes, the relationship that very young children and children of all ages have with different kinds of media is what causes parents to have concerns. They just don't understand why it is that they're so tethered into it. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because, you know, as much as we've moved ahead and kids, you know, young children's time with mobile devices has skyrocketed, you know, tenfold in just 5 years. But at the same time, what they're actually doing on it, a lot of the times, they're watching videos. They're watching short videos, maybe. They're choosing the videos from an infinite menu of videos. But the overwhelming activity that young children and children of many ages have with the screens is still the same, which is watching videos. And that should inform how we think about this whole relationship, I think.
And Dimitri,
I want to go ahead, Dimitri. Ways in which these devices facilitate that. So we talk about binge watching. We've normalized that culturally for adults. What happens in the case of children is that YouTube quite deliberately will feed you the next video based on what you just watched. It's designed to make it difficult for you to go away. So the moment you finish watching something, here are eight other things based on the selection you just made, one of which presumably will be of interest to you. It draws you in and it keeps you in. And I want to point out that this is not accidental or incidental. This is quite intentional. This is deliberately built into these platforms to keep children engaged in this, keep children and adults, I might point out, but engaged in the screen. We live in this attentional economy, and our attention has essentially been monetized. And the developers of these platforms and of these games and these apps are essentially making money by keeping our attention focused on their screen.
Dimitri Christakis, Anya Kamenetz, stand by. We've got a lot of callers who want to get in on this conversation, so let's go to a few of them right in a row here. Nancy is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Nancy, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share one of the things that we've used to kind of manage our 5-year-old son's technology use is the app called Free Time that's on the Kindle. And that has really been beneficial in allowing us to limit the different types of usage of the Kindle for him. So he has limited video, limited games, and unlimited book use, and all of this is only on the weekends. But what other apps or technology have you seen that's out there that could help benefit other parents in trying to manage this for their children?
Great question. Anya?
Yeah. So some of the apps I profile in the book are called Circle and Moment and Torch. And they all have different focuses. So some apps really focus on, shutting off the Wi-Fi and limiting the hours of use. And other apps try to allow you to have more fine-tuned control. And I like Moment because when the families that are – if you're signed onto it, a number of people can be signed onto it within a family. And you can set times when you all have your devices down. So, for example, family dinner time, your devices are going to go down for that. And so the idea that it is something that you agree agree on as a family and you balance as a family is something that I really like. Now, there have been calls to get the makers of the devices, like Apple and the Samsung, and Amazon as well, to build better controls into the devices themselves so you don't have to get an extra app for it. And that's something that, you know, I think is going to take some more activism. There's been a recent call by Apple shareholders, for example, to get better parental controls built in. But until then, you know, it's going to be kind of like going out in the app store and seeing what you can find. Flipped is another app that I've seen that gives you an incentive, makes it harder to use your phone during times that you've designated.
Nancy, thanks for that question. Let's go to Matthew, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Matthew. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. How are you doing?
Very well.
I just had a question for maybe some specific families that have a lot of home technology, like the Amazon Alexa, the smart thermometers, lights, and things like that. You mentioned setting an example for your kids by putting yourself away from screen time in like your morning routines and things like that. But what if you have a home that's very ingrained in your smartphone? What advice do you have for those families?
Great question, Anya. Yeah, the Internet of Things, it's dominating our homes more and more.
So I have a piece out in Fast Company about this because screen time is a concept that makes sense if you have screens that are bounded and you can turn off. But that's the world of – that's today. But next week it's going to be immersive, multiple realities, mixed reality, augmented reality, and AI. The interesting thing about Alexa is, you know, kids love interacting with Alexa and home devices. And it kind of brings the technology back into a shared space and a shared conversation. And just as I see people adopting kind of family movie nights, surprisingly, is a best practice, what Dimitri called analog media. I think that the AI has some possibilities there. You know, instead of you glancing down at your phone and muttering, you know, learning about the day ahead, you can have a conversation and say, hey, Alexa, what's the weather like, right? Or let's ask it a question. Let's find out together the answer to a question. So, you know, I don't think it's so bad. And I think that, you know, voice search is something I've used with my daughter from an early age where she wants to participate and learn that the Internet is out there to help her answer her questions and satisfy her curiosity.
Dimitri Christakis, what's your answer to that question? I mean, if you think about sort of the expanding Internet of Things in people's homes as either a good thing, a bad thing, how to contend with it?
It's a real thing, to be sure. I think that the larger question is that we view technology not as inherently good or bad. It's here to stay, and it clearly has many advantages. I think we have to view it as a tool and a productive tool at that. And I think if there's any risk to the Internet of Things, it's that there's it's kind of the real world application of there's an app for that. We're technologizing things, adding technology to things without any clear benefit. And I think that's where families should really think twice about what they're really doing. Is it really advantageous to add this additional piece of technology to their homes? And if it is, and it's used productively, I agree with Anya. There's nothing to be concerned about per se. I don't want to come across as some kind of a Luddite by any stretch. I clearly appreciate the enormous potential upside that digital media have to offer children of all ages. It's just that it has to be managed carefully.
Christina is calling from Southington, Connecticut. Christina, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call. So I come from a home where we co-parent. So it's pretty modern over here. But the issue is that we can't ever really find a cohesive way to implement screen time. And, you know, so at one house it'll be, oh, but, you know, it's so good to do these games like Minecraft, which are like Legos, et cetera, et cetera. And at my house, I'm like, well, we really need to monitor it because maybe you're getting too much at the other house. So basically what I'm asking is, like, how do we balance that? And I'm not, you know, no advice in any kind of way in that regard, but, you know, what's the proper route to take as far as, like, do we really implement, like, some kind of schedule? Because that sounds like so much to me. Like,
Christina, it's a great question. Anya, what do you think?
A big chunk of my survey respondents were in this boat, whether it was two different households or even two parents within a household. everyone's not on the same page. People have different relationships to the tech. I think just like, you know, general co-parenting, you know, guidelines, you would say there are certain things that are up the discretion of that household, and there are other things that have to be hard and fast across both households. And so if there are true red flags that you're seeing, like, for example, you know, at the other house, you never get to bed on time because you're always, you know, screen time is running rampant. That would be a real issue that you'd want to discuss. On the other hand, if it's really just a matter of, you know, this house is quieter, less, you know, more tech-averse, and this house is more wired. I think that can be a good balance for kids to experience, as long as it's positive in both places and there's experiences of joint engagement and balancing with other activities. It's okay for there to be different rules in different places because that's just how life is.
Anya, one of the points that comes through in your book is you really avoid sort of being dogmatic, like, you know, this is what families should do. This is the number of hours. This is what they shouldn't do. So, you know, this leads to a general question. How do you measure how much screen time works for your kids and your family? I mean, for your particular set of kids, your particular family.
You have to go by the evidence in front of you, which is, how are your kids doing? Mm-hmm. Are they thriving? Are they doing well in school? Are they sleeping enough? Are they getting enough exercise? Are they healthy? How are their relationships with family and friends? Do they have other things that they love besides media? You know, if all of these things are true on the positive side of things, then you should feel free to weave in media in the way that it works for you and your family. It's not going to cause some kind of silent harm. We're not talking about radon gas, right? We're talking about things that come into our lives and produce observable effects. So if you're seeing those observable effects, on the other hand, if there's attentional problems, if there's learning problems in school, if relationships are getting pruned away because they're so obsessed with their tech, if you're fighting about it all the time, if the kids are sneaking around to use the technology, you've got to cut back. You've got to figure out a way to put it into your life in a more reasonable, rational way.
It sounds like a good sort of common sense approach. We're up against a break. We're going to continue our conversation, and we're going to say goodbye to Dr. Dimitri Christakis, director of Seattle Children's Research Institute Center for Child Health. Dr. Christakis, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
And as our conversation continues, we're looking at the science and real-life experiences of families in screen times. You can join the conversation. Does your family spend quality time watching screens together? Have you ditched the screens for outdoor adventures? I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
It's not a secret. Parenting is hard. But maybe we shouldn't put so much pressure on ourselves.
To get to good outcomes, sometimes you do better by not worrying about outcomes at all.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, host of Hidden Brain. Join us as we explore two very different models of what it means to raise a human.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're discussing healthy consumption of digital media. You can join the conversation. Could you go a day, an hour, without looking at a screen? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm here with Anya Kamenetz. She's the lead digital education correspondent for NPR and author of The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. Anya, some listeners have written in to us. One writes, TV did make kids less active, less outdoorsy, less social, and now screen time is allowing them to relate to each other indirectly. Ever seen a group of teens sitting together, in quotes, all texting other teens? Here's another comment from HelloKitty0580. I'm just glad I grew up most of my life before this explosion of screens, and I'm also glad I don't have to raise a child through all of this. Anya, I wanted to read those two comments because you talk about the positives that the screens can bring families and the joys, frankly, that screens can bring families. And I'd love you to sort of respond to that sentiment that's out there.
So there's a story that we hear again and again, and that is about how a new technology is corrupting the young and going to cause a lot of moral harm and change the character of an entire generation. And we heard it, you know, it was said about the automobile. It was said about the telegraph. It was right. Said about televisions, movies, comic books, and you name it. And so,
you know, it was said about radio at one point, too, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. Radio is the candy of the young, rotting the brain. So, you know, I'm tired of that story. I don't think it tells us anything new. And I think that as much as it raises anxieties and there are you know, real issues here to be concerned about and to talk about, falling into that narrative, it's just a little bit too easy. And so what I want to turn it around to is to say, what are these technologies bringing to our lives in their best moments, in our best moments? How are we actually gaining and growing through the use of media? I've spent a lot of time reporting on how technology can allow us to learn about anything, anywhere, anytime, to completely immerse into a passion project or learn a new skill. And I think that we need to be very mindful about the positives that media can bring to our lives, because the good can drive out the bad. If we're sharing those positive experiences with our kids, we can help create more of them.
All right. Let's get some more calls. Aaron is calling from New Milford, Connecticut. Aaron, you're on the air. It's good to have you.
Yes. Hi, Anthony. Hi, Anya. Thank you for having me. I am the mother of three children, ages 5, 8, and 12. And I really just kind of wanted to make a couple of comments. My husband's a high school teacher. I'm a psychotherapist, and I work with, you know, a number of adolescents. And it is a little bit baffling to me, I will say, that it seems so hard for parents to say no to social media. I think that as parents ourselves, we really try, my husband and I try to lead by example. We are not people that are connected to our phones 24/7. They're not anywhere near us much of the time. And we went from flip phones to smartphones only a couple of years ago. And it's just everything in moderation, I guess, is the way that I see it. Not that I, as Anya was just saying, there are some positive things to technology. Certainly, my husband being a high school teacher, there is this BYOD, bring your own device, you know, to school now. There certainly are some benefits. However, you know, in my practice, I see really a lot of downsides. Beds in the bedroom at night, children having difficulty sleeping, and, you know, and in a way it just sort of seems like a no-brainer. Take the phone out of the room. Don't do this. This isn't healthy. You know, definitely just
Aaron,
in moderation.
We've got it. Moderation, say no, lead by example. It all sounds like an intelligent approach to this. So we're going to take that on board. I want to go to Anja, who's calling from Georgetown, Mass. Anja, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Anthony, thanks for having me. I'm just calling. My question is about video games, actually. My boyfriend and I have very different ideas about not only video game usage, but also the types of video games that are being played out there. So he, you know, my boyfriend got an Xbox when he was 10, and I grew up with no video games at all. So where's the happy medium in that? I have a son. He's only 6 months now, but I'm just looking into the future. What would be, you know, I know Anya was saying that it's different for every family, but especially, you know, I'm not really into the whole violent.
Got it. So what type of video games are appropriate, it sounds like you're asking, for your family?
Exactly. You got good reason to be concerned about violent video games. You know, there's worrisome evidence, although there's still a very hearty debate about that. Video games tend to be a lot more compelling to boys than they are to girls, and so there's a lot of division amongst couples on that point. I think that you know, as you develop your approach, and luckily you have a few years to think about this, it makes sense to make guidelines based on what your priorities are as a family. I mean, we've heard sleep. Sleep is a really big one. Protecting that sleep, that nap time. Maybe looking at emotional regulation. And so what I mean by that is one red flag for a problematic relationship with video games is an emotional explosion when you go to turn it off. So even if you've agreed to turn it off at a certain time and the kid gets upset after that, that is a red flag that you're going to want to slow down on the video game. So you know, kind of hanging back and watching for evidence as things develop, and then you can make your guidelines based on what you see, and you can have a common rational discussion about, you know, these are the things that I'm concerned about. These are, you know, this is where it's showing up, and then I want to limit it based on that. And hopefully the whole family can be on the same page.
Anja, thanks so much for that question. Let's go to Iris, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Iris, you're on the air.
Hi, my question has to do with screens in schools.
Screens and, in schools, Iris, right?
Screens in schools, yep. Correct. Our kids, two of our children are in middle school, and the school decided starting in fifth grade, so you've got about 10-year-olds, everybody's going to get a laptop, a Chromebook, each child is. And the rationale being technology is the future. This will better prepare children for the future. I just see a lot of downsides in my own kids that a 10-year-old really doesn't have the self-discipline, the self-control to manage their own laptop. And I just wonder, is there any evidence or data that giving each child a laptop in a school setting, or I also saw it in the public schools here, they wanted to give each child a tablet starting in kindergarten.
Yeah, Iris, so this is such a great question, and it's actually one that I had, Anya. I remember when my daughter was in middle school, her school very proudly told us all that everyone was getting an iPad, and isn't this great, and we're joining the future. But the question of what's the effect on the kids? Do we know? Do we have any evidence? Do we have any research on this?
Yeah, we do. And it's very mixed. I mean, technology is no silver bullet. And the gap between the promise that it's demonstrated in some studies versus the actual lived reality in schools across the country and across the world is very large. You know, a multi-country study by the OECD came out finding that the more kids use computers, the worse their scores were in eighth grade and 10th grade in international tests. You know, and that was down to, you know, the kids who did the best were the ones that used computers once a month in class. So there is no wholesale benefit. At the same time, there's a strong argument to be made that if our offices and our workplaces are full of computers, the classrooms ought to be too, because this is how people get their work done. Not that it's going to vault them into the front running and make us the, you know, most educated country in the world, but that learning how to use a computer is a basic part of being alive these days. So figuring out how to thread that needle and how to navigate that, you know, it's totally okay for parents to push back on the school and on the teachers and to say, what is really the purpose of this assignment using tech? Or, hey, you know, my kid is spending 4 hours doing a one-hour homework assignment because they're on video chat and music. And can we rein this in a little bit? Is there another way to complete this assignment for, you know, in a severe case? Or just kind of pruning it back a little bit. So I think that there's a pendulum that might swing back pretty fast. We already kind of saw it with tablets in the classroom. They became very popular. And then it kind of crashed because people realized that it's useful to have keyboards in a classroom. So, you know, schools are feeling their way along this, and parents need to do the same thing.
Interesting. All right. Let's go to Richmond, who's calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Hi, Richmond. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you.
Sure.
As my background, I have three little girls, 3, 5, and 7, and they are a blended family, three different households. And tablets have gotten as inexpensive that for Christmas, all three of them actually got tablets. And coming from different households or different brands, different kind of control, whether it be, you know, Google has their own controls and everything else has their own controls. So you have to do each one individually, which is rather frustrating. And once you have that, each child at their age accepts taking the tablet away or spending time on the tablet differently. And I have to say that the 3-year-old and 5-year-old are probably the worst when it comes to, you know, we limit it to an hour a day. When that hour is up, regardless of whether in a good mood when that's up, it's a fussing, fighting sort of situation. And we've tried multiple things, and the tablets have actually required us as a family to set rules, such as when you get home, no tablets before supper, or no tablets after 8 p.m. and things like that, which we didn't have before.
Yeah.
It wasn't an issue with just VCR and such like that.
Well, Richmond, let's listen. What do you recommend, Anya, for Richmond?
Well, I mean, it sounds like he's finding his way. And I think that it's a very good observation to note the emotional reaction. And this is something that a lot of families and pediatricians are observing, that there's a little bit of an explosive reaction sometimes because it is so compelling. And, you know, we're in the business of helping our kids develop emotional regulation and relationships to things that they love. And so with the 5-year-old and even with the 3-year-old, I think you can talk to them about that and say, hey, you know, last time you really made a fuss when we took it away. And if that happens again, we're going to shorten up on your time, you know. And so one thing that worked well with when my daughter was even like 2.5 and 3 was to say, okay, you're starting your iPad time now. In an hour from now when we turn it off, what do you want to do next? Are we going to go to the playground? Are we going to play with your dolls? Are we going to have a snack? And helping them make that transition. So you kind of scaffold that where you might have a tough moment, but it's worth it in the end if you're able to get through that moment and realize, hey, I'll have my iPad time tomorrow. It's okay.
Let's go to Chad, who's calling from Narragansett, Rhode Island. Hi, Chad. You're on the air. It's good to have you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Anthony. Yeah, we have a family policy. We have 2 daughters, 9 and 12-year-old, and friends of ours had taught us this policy, and it really works out well. We've been doing it for a good about 9 months now. Our daughters both have tablets, and they have 1 charge per week. So it helps with their own time management.
And one charge per week. In other words, you plug it in, charge it up, and when it runs out of that charge, they have to put it away for the rest of the week.
Correct. And every Sunday night, we recharge it, and they have it for the week. If they get caught trying to charge it themselves, they lose it for the rest of the week. But they haven't done that because they know the consequences, and they go on to other things.
Chad, that sounds like a great solution. Anya, what do you think? That sounds sort of ingenious to me and
very
simple.
I love it. I've never heard it. I'm gonna tell everyone about it. Thanks for sharing.
So just out of curiosity, Chad, Anya, you know this. I'm not even sure how long one charge is going to last. What does that come to out? How many hours per week?
Well, it depends what you do with it, right? If you're streaming video the whole time or video chatting or something, it's going to use it up faster. If you're just reading books, it probably would be slower.
Oh, even better.
So that's neat on that side, too. Yeah.
Wow, Chad, thanks a lot. All right, let's go to Josh, who's calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Josh, you're on the air.
Hey, Anthony.
Hi there.
One thing I want to throw in there. In my house, we have 6 kids from 2 months to 11 years old, and we kind of put a premium on content, regardless of the way that they access it, so through screens or what have you. But we have a list of things in my wife and I, our opinion, that are resume builders, like language learning software, sites such as Khan Academy, even flight simulator software, something that can be converted into a resume builder in the future. These things, to me, are almost no limit up to a point as far as screen time. These things can also, for my kids, can be converted into usable time that they can use to play, and I say play as in like watching videos, watching Netflix, playing video games for my sons, and I feel like that can kind of temper the screen gluttony that some kids have. But really, again, the point for us is content. It's all about content. The way that they're getting it is not critical to me. Are they getting something that's worth putting in their brain? If it's yes, then that is going to be treated differently versus video games and things.
Josh, I really appreciate that call. Anya, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, in terms of sort of, you know, every family is different. We should be thinking about each set of content as different as well.
Absolutely. I think that's a great approach to take. And just to point out that parents might have different parameters for what they consider to be good or important content, but the idea of a resume builder is one that I really like. You know what I love about this is that I think that families aren't talking enough about their positive screen time strategies. There's so much guilt and shame that goes on around this conversation that we don't often always get out in the open and talk about what is working, and that's what I'm loving about this.
Anya, I have a sort of final question for you. At a certain point in the book, you make reference to how much we still don't know about all this. What's the number one thing that you'd like an answer to when it comes to the idea of screens and how to manage screens and the effect of screens on kids?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, to learn a little bit more about the brain development issues and the kind of work that Dr. Christakis is doing, where, you know, what is this overstimulation doing? What is the brain of someone who's chronically multitasking look like? And does it look different with exposure? I mean, we know about, you know, sensitive periods for things like learning a second language. So what does it mean to what is happening in our babies' brains right now as they're learning to interact with touch screens at such a young age? And as he points out, you know, this is the zero generation. This is the first group of kids who are doing this. Are they going to have new kinds of skills? Are their brains going to work in different ways? And, you know, it's going to be a while before we really know.
Well, lots that we still don't know. But Anya Kamenetz, thank you so much for bringing this expertise and this really thoughtful book to us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for the conversation, Anthony.
That's Anya Kamenetz. She's the lead digital education correspondent for NPR and author of The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital Media and Real Life. You can continue the conversation. You can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Follow me on Twitter at Anthony G. Brooks. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.